Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by somebody. I was really happy that we bumped into each other out there in Vegas. I'm joined by Sam Vecenie. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm great, man. I am making this slow, steady trip down to your neck of the woods in Orange County right now. Going to go down, see the Adidas Championships, see some high school kids play basketball, kids that won't be eligible until the 2021 draft. So my day is going to go lovely today, Anthony. How are you doing?
That commute is terrible. Like, honestly, if I wasn't on the phone when I used to have to make this commute, like, I just found myself pulling out my actual hair. By the end of those trips, I wound up looking like Harrison.
Yeah, it's genuinely soul-sucking. I did it yesterday, too. So now 2 days in a row of making the, like, 65-mile drive from Hollywood down to Orange County, it's just enough to kill you.
Yeah. Today we're going to talk about basically the kids. The Lakers basically made this decision that they are not going to extend money into next offseason. They wanted to keep that flexibility as open as they possibly could, and in doing so, they are banking on the kids, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Kuzma, Hart, all those guys stepping up and being able to produce at a playoff contention level. And who better to talk to this about than Sam, who does draft coverage for The Athletic, and he also has his Game Theory podcast, both of which you really should be checking out. And if you're listening to this and not doing that, I'm not sure really what you're doing with your life. But let's start here. Would you agree with the general analysis of this is the gamble that they're making, that they really believe in Ingram and Kuzma and Lonzo, that they really think that those guys can step up, and that while they are veterans and while they are free agent additions who will demand minutes just because of those titles, that really the bulk of the production that the Lakers are hoping to make or get from this year is going to have to come from LeBron and then also the kids?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. It's funny to characterize it as a gamble, because in many ways I agree with you, it is a gamble, but it's also a conservative approach, right? Like, they're not going out and making the splashy move. They're going out and kind of playing it conservatively. They're playing the status quo. They're hoping that they've made the right decisions over the last 3 years, drafting Brandon Ingram, drafting Kyle Kuzma, drafting Lonzo Ball. Josh Hart obviously just won MVP of Summer League. He looks great. So it's just very interesting to kind of look at what they're doing and assume that everything is going to work out, right? Because that's what they're betting on. They're betting on their evaluators being right and being able to build a team around LeBron James that, may be youthful in nature and can hopefully grow around him, instead of the approach the Cavaliers took, for instance, where they immediately traded the kid. They traded Andrew Wiggins. I guess we can call Anthony Bennett a kid. He wasn't an asset at that stage, but yeah. Like, they traded their number one overall pick from, like, the year before. I mean, it's just very interesting to see the two ways that these teams have gone about team building around LeBron James, even when they have the presence of potential stars like Kyrie Irving in the case of Cleveland, and in my opinion, in the case of Brandon Ingram, in the case of the Lakers.
It's funny that you mention that LeBron is at the center of all this. Like, it's hard for me to think that he's kind of done an about face in this way, but that's really what, in order for these moves to actually make sense. And, you know, we had that reported 3 hour conversation between him and Magic, and they sat down and they talked about, you know, the direction of his career, the different stages of his career and what might be coming next. And it's kind of interesting that if we are to believe that they're on the same page here, LeBron really completely rethought team building, right? Like, to sign off on this stuff and to sign off on trusting kids to help him reach this next stage of his career, like, that's a completely different LeBron than we saw in Cleveland.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the interesting part about it is, like, I think you and I can probably agree that, I mean, the Lakers probably aren't going to be title contenders in year one now.
Nope.
Like, that's fair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though LeBron is there.
I can't believe you're such a hater. Unbelievable.
Well, I am on a podcast called Locked On Lakers, so, like, I figure I have to at least, like, kind of preface this with, you know, with trepidation in such a statement. But having said that, I mean, they really are just kind of throwing away your LeBron's prime in terms of title contention. And I think the idea behind it is the opportunity cost aspect of this, right? So going out and acquiring a guy like a Kawhi Leonard would have cost multiple assets. Just realistically, you're talking about getting rid of Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, you know, and you would have had to give up him. You know, instead of that, instead of getting this extra year of the championship window being open, I think what the Lakers are trying to do is for a year and then open the window wider in the 2019-2020 through the, you know, 2023. Outside a free agent with the cap base that you've continued to accumulate, be it a Kawhi Leonard or be it someone lesser than Kawhi Leonard, and use that aspect of team building. I think that, you know, given what the Warriors are and given honestly what the Rockets are, because I think the Rockets are just an unbelievable basketball team right now. I think it's kind of a smart move, honestly. I mean, we can quibble about some of the decisions that Magic Johnson has made since signing LeBron James. Like, I don't think Lance Stephenson is very good, but I think they could have better allocated that room exception that they had.
Yep.
But in general, I think the big picture ideas are right in line with what I would do. I think it's actually a smart move for the league.
Yeah, it's they've talked a ton about sustainability, and this was the entire conversation that Pete and I had yesterday, is that, look, if the goal is just to make the best team right now, then obviously you trade the kids for Kawhi. But that also leaves you completely screwed after the LeBron James era. Like that leaves your cupboard completely bare after, because it's not like you're going to get great lottery picks while LeBron's a Laker. So you're just kind of, LeBron retires or moves on, and then the Lakers are sitting there in the same exact spot they were at the end of Kobe's career, where they had to go through 5 years to reach this spot. And I think. Magic and I think Pelinka and I think Jeannie kind of sat there and said, look, we have a great opportunity here, obviously, with LeBron committing to the Lakers. And we can talk about why he did that and the business aspect of it and whether it was a Lakers decision or a business decision. That doesn't matter to me as much. They just realized we have LeBron.
It can be both, honestly.
It really can. And so they realize, or they recognize, this is a great opportunity here to contend in the immediate future because we have LeBron, but also set us up for the future after he's done. And it's kind of interesting that that's not typically how the Lakers have operated. That's not really typically how, until very recently, very many teams at all have operated, right? Like the Warriors investing in Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney and the other young players that they have, like, that's not something that most title contending great teams have done. They've just kind of said, we're just going to keep the pedal to the metal, and we're going to keep on adding veterans to title teams to keep this title window going. But they're well set up no matter how the next few seasons play out. And I think it's been kind of cool to watch that take place in real time, watch it, being a fan of the NBA, and the Lakers are kind of taking a similar approach. We're gonna take a quick second here. When we come back, I'll let you respond to the team building aspect of this, and then we'll get into the kids specifically shortly thereafter. All right, so the last thing we left off talking about was the different ways that these teams are building their teams, not just with immediate contention in mind, but but with the future in mind and sustainability in mind. And I think that makes for a more interesting NBA, in my opinion, because now when if these teams are really building for sustainability and sustained success, that's how you have rivalries that'll stretch for the, like the Warriors and Lakers could potentially have this division rivalry for the next, at least during LeBron's time. And then it might extend beyond that if these teams are really interested in staying competitive for the foreseeable future. That's really kind of fun as a general NBA fan.
Well, it's great for the NBA, and I think that the biggest thing to note here, and I think that one of the best lessons of this offseason and even last offseason that you can learn is that team building has become so much smarter over the course of the last, 3 years, realistically, because teams, I think, are taking after maybe baseball. I think baseball has always been ahead of the game in terms of team building, mostly due to the presence of analytics, kind of making their way to baseball a little bit earlier because it's a true, outcome event-based sport, whereas basketball is so much more fluid, it's a little bit more difficult to track in that way. But as more analytically inclined people start to work in front offices, I think you're starting to see that teams are valuing the cost control and team control aspects mm-hmm. of players more now. And that is so much smarter in terms of how you have to operate from an NBA perspective. I do understand that, the NBA is very different insofar as one singular player can so drastically impact and affect a game in comparison to other sports, right? Just because there are five guys on the floor, there's only one basketball. That singular player can really affect the outcome of the game in a different way. But at the same token as well, those guys, whenever you have a chance to get someone like that, who, Brandon Ingram, I think, is a potential all-star. I think Lonzo Ball could be an all-star down the road. You just look at how valuable those guys can be, guys who are true difference makers. And if there's even a chance that you're going to get one of those guys, you can't give them up while they're cheap, because the immense amount of maneuverability and flexibility that those guys allow for you to have while they're cheap is just so high. It's really remarkable how even with the updated CBA, where someone like DeAndre Ayton, selected number one overall this year, is going to be making $8.5 million. If he hits in the way that, they're expecting, it's still just such a massive, massive
yep.
Boon to the organization.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers during the three-peat era had Kobe on veteran minimum deals, the equivalent of a veteran minimum deal, and he was a top 10 player in the NBA. and so yep. when they were paying Shaq max money, you had Kobe there making that amount of money, and it made it possible for them to make additions up and down the roster. And yeah, I mean, that's really what this comes down to, is that if you're going to beat the Warriors, you not only have to hit with your max guys, the Lakers are fortunate here that their max guy right now is going to be LeBron, and then we'll see which max guy, if they get another one next season, who that'll be. But their value elsewhere across the roster also has to be at its nth degree to compete with the Warriors. And I think that's why at the end of the day the Lakers wound up not trading for Kawhi, because it's impossible to replicate that value if you use all your assets on one singular player. Let's turn our attention to the actual singular players. And I'll just ask you straight up, which guy across the roster are you most interested to see play with LeBron?
That's probably Brandon Ingram, I mm-hmm. think, because in many ways, I think Ingram, not even in many ways, I think Ingram is the most talented young player the Lakers have. That's just kind of a realistic assessment of where his game is, what his skill set is, how long it's taken him to adjust to levels as he's bounced up levels from the time he was in high school, now through the NBA, where it really seemed like he took a leap midway through his second year, really. Him as that secondary guy is very interesting to me, because he doesn't fit the traditional archetype of a guy that is very successful with LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
He's not this guy who's super comfortable spacing the floor. He's a guy who does succeed having the ball in his hands, much like LeBron James. He is just such a multi-skilled, multi-faceted player that, you know, even though he doesn't fill those roles, he also has potential to still provide just absolutely immense value because he's going to be a really good defender at some point because he's so long. He's so multi-positional. He's versatile. He can guard different player types. He can really, really pass the ball. And if you listen to LeBron James's complaints over the course of his years in Cleveland, it was always, we need another secondary ball handler. We need another guy who can create off the dribble and who can create for himself. He always asked for backup point guards, right? Brandon Ingram can kind of act as like a team's third string point guard, yep, in many ways, behind LeBron James and behind whoever their actual point guard is. So I love the idea of his game, but there are some real questions, I think, that he's going to have to prove over the course of his, you know, maybe first 50 games with LeBron.
Well, we're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll get to those concerns. Yeah, I completely agree. Like, the idea of Brandon Ingram playing alongside LeBron is great, but I wanted to just, I'll just let you keep building on the point that you were making. There are concerns here because, like, yes, it's cool to have a secondary creator, but it's also important to have a spot up shooter, and that's not something that Ingram has ever really been comfortable doing.
Yeah, and you know, I think that the Lakers are going to have to build around that. Some of the language that Magic Johnson is using in regard to how they're building in comparison to the Warriors is a little bit concerning to me, like saying that, you know, I watched every playoff series and we're trying to build almost an anti-Warriors that seems like they want to go for, like a team that is good to, like, is good in the playoffs, and I don't really know what else. Like, it seems like they're not valuing floor spacing in the way that I would hope that they would. Realistically, to me, that just says that Magic is bad at math, because three-pointers are much more efficient shots, particularly from the corners, and whenever you have good shooters on the floor, than two-point shots are, even for guys who can really post up and, you know, score inside. So that part of it is concerning, and I hope that Luke Walton can, you know, kind of move beyond that and use the Warriors' background that he has in order to make a more sustainable system. But it's just something that's going to have to play itself out over the first little while here. I don't really have a great gauge for how it's going to go. And I think in many ways, that's why I'm so interested in Brandon Ingram playing with LeBron. It's because of that uncertainty, despite what I think is an immense talent level for Ingram.
Yeah, it was kind of funny watching Ingram last year, especially because, like, you know, in all superhero movies, period, especially like the first parts of any series, they realize, holy crap, I can do all these super cool things, right? And then yeah, there's that was kind of like watching Ingram midway through last season, where he was like, holy crap, my arms can stretch halfway across the court. Look at that. And he started impacting games, yeah, that way, or he was really extending to the basket in ways that he hadn't done to that point. And look, if there's somebody who you want this version of Brandon Ingram to learn for, it's LeBron, right? It's somebody who uses all of his physical tools to dominate all over the court. And as Ingram becomes more comfortable with the tools that he has, that's kind of the mental aspect of actually using those consistently. Like, that's going to be really fascinating to watch. The other guy who I think really fits really well with LeBron is Lonzo. And it has more to do with the defensive side of things. You and I talked about this in Vegas. How do you think Lonzo fits alongside James?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, if for all of the reasons that I just said that, you know, I'm very interested in the Brandon Ingram fit with, you know, LeBron James, I am equally as interested, although somewhat less concerned, in terms of the fit. Like, a lot of people have been saying that Lonzo really likes the ball in his hands. This is a bad idea for the Lakers to keep going down this road. I mean, yeah, he likes to have the ball, but you look back at the times when he's been most successful in his past. I mean, in high school, he certainly loved to have the ball and loved to get in transition. But a lot of the most interesting aspects of Lonzo's game is that he's actually not this like incredible pick and roll. He's not a guy that you just throw a ball screen at the top of the 3-point line and say, create a play. He's a guy that just makes incredibly good decisions with basketball. And then, you know, be it head manning the ball, be it picking out a corner shooter from the opposite wing. Like it's a skill set that offensively I think fits particularly when you're talking about him in transition, because, you know, that's going to be a deadly transition attack. I think LeBron James, Lonzo Ball, both of whom are incredibly unselfish, both of whom have great athleticism out in open spaces, at least in Lonzo's case. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in Brandon Ingram, you throw in Kyle Kuzma, you throw in guys like that. I think it's actually going to work really, really well. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, Lonzo was so much further ahead of what I expected him coming into the league. I'll be honest, I thought he was going to be a disaster coming into the NBA defensively, because a lot of the concerns you saw from him on the ball in his first NBA season, I thought that those were going to be a lot more pronounced in his first year. You know, the fact that he dies on screens, on ball screens, for instance, that's still something that he needs to work on. Mm-hmm. The just general point of attack disruptiveness that he can bring, he does need to do that stuff. But you look at the way that he always just thinks, you know, three steps ahead of the opposing ball handler and seems to just innately understand how a certain play is going to develop. That stuff really plays itself out well on the weak side. It plays itself out well in help defense when he can kind of, you know, get his hands in there and create steals when digging down on a post player. It's just those little things that he brings that makes him such an effective defender. Now, to play with LeBron, you do need a guy who can be that point of attack defender. I don't think that's going to be Lonzo. I do think he's going to fit well, but they still need to find that guy, assuming that it's not Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, given the fact that he is only signed for 1 year. His cap hold is going to be, what, I believe, like 18 million, something in that range, like that. Next offseason. So they're going to want him. They're probably going to not prioritize him at the very least. He can do, you know, on-ball defense exceedingly well. You look at the way that he's defended Stephen Curry in the past, for instance. I think he does as good of a job doing that and kind of shadowing and mimicking his footwork and movement as anyone else in the league. But at the same time, they need to find a long-term answer there to be a rabid on-ball defender, because that's not what Lonzo is.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is at the end of the season, the Lakers are already banking on Kawhi Leonard coming. So, you know, that's kind of that's a nice option.
I mean, Kawhi Leonard would be a great option. Klay Thompson, again, would be a really good option if he wants to, you know, join the Lakers. I'm trying to think of a couple others. There's a guy named Kyrie Irving. That would be a funny one for so many reasons. Not a good point of attack defender, but it would work hilariously for all of our enjoyment.
Chaos is great.
There are a lot of options out there, at least.
I wanted to get back to Lonzo, because the point that you were making about the way that he goes about, like, it's funny that the stuff, it's all instinctual, right? And when people say that he dominates the ball, that tells me that you don't really watch Lonzo all that much. The way that he kind of quote-unquote dominates is really while he's acting off of the ball. He's sitting there watching the court develop, and then he does a really good job of taking a quick glance before he catches the ball at the way the court is set up, and then he attacks the angle that he knows is either going to open up or might eventually open up, and then that's how he gets into it, and he creates either usually for other people because he can't finish at the rim. But that's kind of how he goes about it. And then defensively, he does the same kind of thing, but trying to do the opposite and creating havoc that way. And that's where, you know, in terms of fit with LeBron, if Lonzo could shoot, preferably, it really works out. But even if he doesn't shoot the ball particularly well, having LeBron command as much respect from the defense as he's going to, and then have the ball rotate over to Lonzo, who's already a step ahead there. All you need at that point now is a spot-up shooter to capitalize on the advantages that LeBron and then eventually Lonzo might make. And that's where guys like Kuzma and Hart kind of fit into all of this. And actually, it kind of builds on what you were talking about earlier about the point of attack kind of defender that they need to invest long-term in. That seems to be Hart. Like, Magic is really high on Hart. I just don't know if he has that kind of capability quite yet.
Yeah, I don't know if he has the quickness to defend at the point of attack consistently against lead guards. I'm a huge Josh Hart fan. I think he is absolutely terrific. Like, there are I'm not going to say there are very few guys I'd trade him for, but like, there are very few realistic packages out there that I would include Josh Hart in a trade for, because he's so, so cheap for three more years. And as we mentioned at the top, having team control is incredibly valuable. In Lonzo's case, too, the interesting part of this as well is that, you know, you mentioned the idea of, you know, LeBron taking on a lot more defensive attention. That's really going to open up Lonzo's game in terms of cutting off the ball as well, even toward the basket, because he is really, really instinctive and smart cutting toward the basket, getting ahead of steam, and finishing above the rim, because once he gets moving, he's a really good athlete. He's not a great athlete from a standstill whenever he has to create his own momentum, but whenever, you know, and has the ball in his hands. But if you can get him moving off the ball and then get him the ball while his momentum is already going forward, he can finish way above the rim. He can get by opposing defenders. It's just that you have to get him moving first. And the idea of a more like motion-based offense is very interesting to me, because, you know, you could see more dedicated dribble handoff plays, I think, involving Lonzo Ball. You know, you shoot him up from the corner, get him ahead of steam going early, and try to, you know, see if he can get some momentum going toward the basket. There are just a lot of different ways, I think, for the Lakers to go about building an offense now that they have LeBron James. And I mean, surprise, the best player in the world gives you a lot of marginal advantages in terms of roster building. But like, you know, kind of trying to map out dynamically how the Lakers offense is going to run.
The last guy that I want to, I mean, we could talk a little bit about Sfi and Mo Wagner a little bit, but the guy who I think is really going to be asked to do a lot here is Kyle Kuzma. And one of the topics before I hopped on here on Twitter was, I think Pincus had a report with Bleacher Report that in one of the Lakers executives that he talks to, it wants to see the Lakers, I guess, quote unquote, death lineup of Lonzo, I think either KCP or Hart, Ingram, Kuzma, and LeBron. The one concern there I have is, if you're going to have LeBron at the center, you need everybody on the perimeter to be able to switch and make his life as easy as possible at the center. Otherwise, he's not going to want to do it for very long. And the guy I have the most concern about doing that with is Kyle Kuzma. Even if, you know, if that's really all he has to focus on is all right, we need you to be steady defensively, to good defensively, which I don't think he's capable of, and also go down there and hit shots when we ask you to. He's the guy. I think he is the wild card here for what the Lakers are trying to do.
Yeah, in many ways, Kyle Kuzma has always been the wild card. even at like Utah, he was always the, you know, potential breakout guy, and that breakout never 100% came. And then he obviously busted out as a rookie. But he busted out in a way that kind of portrayed many of the flaws in his game, too. But that's okay. I mean, you mentioned the idea of a death lineup involving Kuzma or one of KCP or Josh Hart.
Yeah.
You could play both KCP and Josh Hart and not play Kyle Kuzma and let Kuzma feast on second units, right? Like, Kuzma is in many ways the wild card, because him learning to defend would be just so essential to what the Lakers want to do, and would provide so much value to what the Lakers want to do. Yeah. I don't know if I see it either. I don't know that his instincts are there, but it's fascinating to me, his ability to shoot, to attack closeouts, to finish at the basket, to have these length extension finishes. the floating finishes that we've seen. These are things that tend to bode well with LeBron's game because LeBron is so good at finding guys in open spaces, which is another thing that Kuzma tends to find. It's just kind of that like wide open little space that, you know, gives him a marginal advantage offensively against his defender.
Yeah, he's really good at just kind of floating into open space. Oop, are you
yeah,
there?
Like, it, you know, we often talk about floating as a negative, right? Whenever we talk about basketball, mm-hmm. but, you know, sometimes being able to float into that little open space and find that little open area is incredibly valuable. And Kuzma does that incredibly well. So I'm just very interested in his fit in many ways, but I don't know that he's an essential guy anymore either to what they want to do, despite his immense talent level. He is also a guy that I think could average 20 points in an NBA season at some point. He is very, very good, but he is just not even, he's not like the fourth most important guy on this team anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah, he went from, Laker fans were out there saying that he shouldn't be included in a Kawhi Leonard trade, which I found kind of funny. And it was just because, like, he, as a rookie, he did the kind of things that casual fans are going to notice, the scoring and the way that he was scoring and the individual offensive talent. I just don't know if he was to continue to improve along that route, I don't know if that's very conducive to winning basketball games. But, like, based on everything that's kind of come out from him and his trainer and stuff, he's been focused on more of the elements of the game that help you and your team succeed. So I guess that's at least a good place to start. Last thing before we get out of here.
Yeah, and well,
go ahead.
Real quick with Kuzma, too, because I think that it's very important to bring just generally this level of this up, I guess, is a way to put it. But he's fearless, man. Like, if you look at the guys LeBron has loved in the past and guys that LeBron has gravitated to in the past, he tends to like those guys, the guys that, you know, aren't afraid of the moment and aren't afraid of failing in many ways. And I think that Kuzma, you know, even more than Brandon Ingram, who I don't think is like a mental midget by any stretch, or Lonzo Ball, who again, I don't think is anywhere near that, but Kuzma in a way embraces it. It seems like he's going to be the kind of guy that LeBron really likes to have around.
Yeah. That's it's funny. I used to teach kids how to shoot, and I would always just tell them, like, all right, be a stupid shooter. Like, you have to immediately forget the last shot. If it was an air ball, who cares? It already happened. You got to move on. And Kuzma has that, like, NFL cornerback kind of mentality of, okay, yeah, you just burned me for 40, but I'm about to pick this one off and go 40 in the opposite direction on you, you know, and you need that. And given the kind of leverage situations that come with LeBron, when he passes somebody the ball, he expects that the team expects that shot to go in. You need those open looks to go in. And if they don't start falling, you don't need what you can't have is somebody who sits there and think about the last two misses. They need to think about the next swish that's coming. So yeah, that's a really good point there. We'll finish on this. It's hard not to see a LeBron James team in the playoffs, and we've already heard in that same report from Pincus earlier today, there is at least one executive out there who is saying that as currently constituted, the Lakers aren't a playoff team. I just don't really see that point of view, and maybe that's my bias speaking here, but that's kind borderline crazy thinking that LeBron James might not be in the playoffs, right?
I would certainly expect LeBron to be in the playoffs. I would be pretty shocked if that wasn't the case. But I think it speaks to the strength of the Western Conference more than anything. Yeah. I mean, like we didn't even talk about the Kawhi deal, but like San Antonio won 47 games last year, and everyone was expecting them to take a step back after trading Kawhi Leonard and just kind of seeing the natural, devolution of their talent, but like they actually went out and got better yesterday by acquiring DeMar DeRozan. Now, I don't think it was the right move for them long term, but that team is going to be better this year than what they were last year because they're essentially replacing Danny Green with DeMar DeRozan. And, you know, you look at Memphis. Memphis is going to be better because they've shored up a wing position with guys like Kyle Anderson, you know, guys like Garrett Temple who can legitimately play minutes. And then they've also, they're also just going to have healthier minutes from Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Denver is hopefully going to be better due to the evolution of their talent and the development of their young pieces. You know, the Clippers probably win 40 games again just because they have talented players. So it's just very, very, I guess, cluttered is the way to put it in the Western Conference. So if you want to say that the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs, I understand that point of view, but that would also require you to be betting against LeBron James. And, like, you, no one should be that dumb, I guess.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that, that betting on LeBron or betting against LeBron in the NBA is not a great way to make a bunch of money. we've found this out.
No.
We found this out over the stretch of, what is it now, 13 years, however long he's been in the NBA. If you've been betting against LeBron for the entirety of his career, you're in the broke house. You're probably in Gamblers Anonymous at this point. All right. Well, that
And like this comes from someone who tried to bet. Like, I was assuming that LeBron would not make the finals this year, right? Like, I bet against LeBron this year. I think that betting against LeBron to make the playoffs versus the finals is different, but, you know, I've learned my lesson at this stage. I'm going to go with LeBron whenever I can go with LeBron in reasonable circumstances.
Yep, I would tend to agree. Well, thanks very much for hopping on with us here today, Sam. I hope I improved your 3-hour commute down to my neck of the woods.
I don't even know where I'm at, man. So somewhere between Hollywood and Orange County. I'm not to Orange County yet, though.
This is one of those situations where you actually kind of wish that a podcast would go for an hour or so that when you hop out of the you're done with the conversation, you hop out of the car and you're at your destination. But unfortunately, David would shoot me if I did something like that. But thanks very much for hopping on. And drive safe. Those of you who are listening, check out Sam's work at The Athletic. Check out his podcast, Game Theory. You can find him on Twitter at Sam_Vecini. Thanks again, man. We'll have to do this again soon.
Yeah, we'll do it again very soon, man.